I'm Victor Kubik. Welcome to Inside United. Today, our exciting guest is Joy Jones. Welcome, Joy.
Thank you, Victor.
We have enjoyed having her here for the Pastor's Development Program, and her husband is pastor of congregations in Watertown, South Dakota, Sioux Falls, and Rapid City. Anyway, we're glad to have you here.
Thank you.
But she's a wife, a mother, a daughter, a sister, a friend to many of us, but also a cancer survivor.
Yes.
And I'd like to start there, actually,
okay.
Even though it's the most negative thing, but I feel like I'd like to hear about you because I'd like to hear about some of the experience you had, what you had, because there are people right now who
sure.
are very sick and people who go through these things, and maybe you could give us some insight.
Well, for me, it made me laugh when you said that I was young because at age 40, I found out I was pregnant with our third child. And throughout that entire pregnancy, the doctors referred to me as advanced maternal age, and they kept referring to me as an older mother. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I kind of started feeling, well, maybe I really am getting old. And then 2 years later at 42, when I was diagnosed with cancer, they kept saying, oh, you're so young. This is so sad. And I thought, well, which am I? Am I old or am I young? So that has always made me laugh. If you want to feel old, get pregnant in your 40s. And if you want to feel young, follow it with cancer. So I was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 42. It was an aggressive form of breast cancer, HER2 positive. And so I found that out when my son was 18 months old. I was nursing and I found a lump and just followed up on it with my doctor. And at each step of the way, they said, well, this can't be cancer. It just doesn't fit the mold. And but sure enough, it was. And you're right. There is something about cancer that is, it's not anything you would ever wish on anyone. It's not a road I ever wanted to walk, and yet it is a road that I have felt profoundly blessed to have walked. So in going through it, I think I have experienced so fully how God does keep his promise to give us beauty from ashes. And so often I think when your life feels like it's in a shambles around your feet, that's where, at least for me, I have found that's where God meets me.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives me that hand up. And so for me, cancer was a new beginning.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were quite public with your story because I was following it on Facebook.
Yes, yes.
We followed the story and some of the, you know, some people are very private.
Yes.
I found that your comments, it was that they were helpful to others. They weren't about yourself and wallowing in, you know, your particular trauma, but you were helpful to others.
Well, I think that part actually surprised me. Honestly, when I began writing about it, it wasn't about helping others. It was trying to make sense of it in my own mind. And mm-hmm. I've always done that through writing. And I think, as I mentioned in one of my earlier posts, I had this idea of sailing through cancer, kind of at the front of the Titanic with arms outstretched and feeling like I was this victor of faith. And what I found very, very soon was that I was in a heap on the floor, you know, with my head over the toilet. And that vision quickly kind of evaporated. And I have said to many people, I felt like, you know, I went into the cancer journey thinking, I want to show my children what a woman of faith looks like navigating mm-hmm. something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, I felt like my faith crumbled around my feet many times because I found that I was angry with God. I found that I was questioning God. I found that I spent a lot of time feeling sorry for myself. And yet I would get these cards and letters and blankets and hats and things in the mail from people all over the world
mm-hmm.
who just they cocooned me with their love
mm-hmm.
and their support. And that cocoon lifted me back up. And that's where I realized, truly, I think for the first time in my life, that I may be in a puddle on the floor, but God's not.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not prevented from working and moving mm-hmm. forward because of that. And I think sometimes when you are in that puddle on the floor, you realize so much more profoundly the strength of his love, because he alone is able to reach down that hand and lift you back up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, for me, has been a life-changing experience.
Well, it was something that was very evident because others have gone to your story and have been have been comforted by it.
Yes, I've had a lot of women actually reach out to me privately. And so I've received phone calls, I've received emails to where someone will be in the initial stages of diagnosis and they saw my story on Facebook, or we've met in passing at the feast or at the GCE or somewhere like that. And they would call me or email me and say, I've just been diagnosed. And so I'd pick up the phone and I'd call them and I'd say, okay, I can walk with you through this for a little while. And I think it is an intensely private journey, mm-hmm. truly. You know, I can companion them to a certain point, but they also have, nobody can take those steps for them. And so everybody has to learn how to walk that road, but there's something about cancer or the death of a loved one or a traumatic experience where you never would, let me think of how to better put this. I did not truly realize how I could receive love until I went through something like that. And I know that's probably not a good explanation. I am a caregiver, mm-hmm. as a mom, as a wife. It's always in my eyesight to what can I be doing for this person in this situation. And I think often as women and mothers, wives, we don't necessarily turn that focus inwardly. And so we don't have the opportunity to experience what it is to need that. And yet when you go through a trial that alters your life so dramatically, people have the opportunity to step up beside you and love you in a way you might have never experienced otherwise. And that mm-hmm. is one of the profound blessings of it.
Well, Joy, how are you different in the most dramatic way from what you were before? Now that you've gone through the Rubicon and crossed the Rubicon of going from being a cancer
right.
patient to a survivor.
I can answer that so easily because I would say it's life has more color than it ever has before. I am aware more than ever now how grateful I am to be alive. I believe you have been to Ironwood, to the preteen mm-hmm. camp. Mm-hmm. The gentleman that owns Ironwood Camp, he was injured in an accident 40 plus years ago and it paralyzed him. And he refers to every day since then as his extra days. And that to me is a beautiful analogy that I have come to think of for myself is I have been given these extra days and I don't want to waste them. I want to fill them up to the brim because I feel like I've been given the gift of life. And as I have told other women who have been diagnosed with cancer since I have been, there is life on the other side of this diagnosis. Whatever that ends up looking like, there is life and it is beautiful and it is worth living. And to never, never, never give up mm-hmm. on that life.
Now, one thing I'll ask, which might be uncomfortable
sure.
here, but there'll be people who come to you for help and they'll die.
Yes.
And that's just the way it happens.
Yeah.
Is that you're a survivor? And I've heard people say, yeah, well, it's good for them, but
yes.
it wasn't for others. But there is something else for those who survive around those who don't die. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
That is a hard one. And it is uncomfortable, but it is also very relevant. I met a lady when I was going through cancer treatment. She is not in our church, and she is actually in my sister-in-law's church, or she was in Central Texas. And she started writing me letters, and she had brain cancer, stage 4 brain cancer, and she was writing letters to me to encourage me, mm-hmm. a stranger she'd never met. And as time went by, we connected by email, and I think I reached out to her later on to say thank you so much for that encouragement. It was integral in my own recovery. And it just happened to be that at the point that I reached out, she went from maintaining to declining quite rapidly. And so, you know, I watched this woman, and her name was Faith, of all things. Mm-hmm. And she had definitely helped to increase my faith. Watching her just in our letters back and forth was a beautiful thing. I felt like I knew her. And then when she died, I just wept. And I thought, here is this woman who had so much to give, so much to offer, and she didn't make it. And you can get into that cycle of questioning, why are they not here and I mm-hmm. am here?
Yeah, yeah.
And yet that tends to be a fruitless road to go down. And I've had to turn it around and say, why not me? Why not me to be alive? Why mm-hmm. not me to go forward? And that it gives me the realization that I don't want to waste it. I don't want to take it for granted, and I don't want to, I feel like God knew that he wasn't done with me yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when sometimes in our lives you realize you think you're a lot farther along in your journey, and then you're faced with something and you realize, wow, I have so far yet to go. Cancer was that for me. It was a wake-up call in my walk with God, in my faith, in my marriage, in my child rearing, that I want to do this better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like I've been given that gift of time, and so I want to use it.
Mm-hmm. I might just comment here that my father died at the age of 42, suddenly of a heart attack after he had it. 2 days later, he was dead.
Yeah.
My mother died at the age of 58 of leukemia, of acute leukemia.
Yes.
And we wondered, too, because we were in, what's the church, you know, you're supposed to be healed and, you know, all this with people praying. But then I look at our lives, the ones who survived, the children and the friends. It brought so many people together.
Yes.
It brought our family together. It made me grow up. I mean, I was 19 when this happened. And I know that there was just an entirely different view of life. And I look upon those as benefits, if you would, you know, after the fact.
Yes.
That are hard to say while you're going through them.
Yes.
And then you see the broader view of life and purpose and God's entire plan for it. And actually down deep, there's a joy in it. An unbelievable kind of a crazy joy, you know, if you want to put it that way, knowing that you have gone through that trial as others go through, and that you get, you've gone through it and succeeded.
I couldn't agree more with that. I've watched my children who were, I believe, 11, 7, and 18 months when I began going through cancer treatment, and watching my girls especially and how they had to grow up very fast. And yet, you know, the love that I experienced from them as a result of going through cancer, of how they came around Mama to love me. There's a story that I will always, always remember. I had first been diagnosed, and I was trying to navigate insurance. And I had made an appointment with one of my cancer doctors. And the business services department called me, and the lady on the other end of the line was obviously not strong in her social skills, but she said, well, your insurance company is out of network. Why would you set up an appointment here if you're out of network? And just treated me almost like I was in the wrong. And I said, ma'am, I had a baby at your hospital. We've done everything through your medical system. We are in network. Well, she assured me we were not. And when you just find out that, you know, when you've been told by your doctors that this could potentially be the end of your life, you know, this is a very aggressive cancer, for lack of a better word. I just fell apart when I got off the phone and was crying kind of in a puddle on the floor. And my girls came in and they surrounded me and they were ready to do battle. They wanted to get that woman on the phone and it was going to be her neck. And I said, well, girls, what we need to do is we need to pray. And as in Exodus 14, you know, we need to ask God to fight for us. This is his battle. And so we prayed that. And then I got on the phone with Chris Rowland and talked to him a little bit. And then I got on the phone with a cancer advocate at the hospital. And I just said, this is what happened. And they both said, we'll take care of it. And that was the last thing I had to do. And a little while later, Chris called me and said, we'll do whatever we have to do to Adam and Network. We'll take care of it. You don't have to worry. And then the nurse advocate called back and she said, I tracked down that woman. She won't be calling you again. And it was unfortunate. And it was a mistake. The medical system was in network. But it's details like that that you don't necessarily think about when you're diagnosed. You're not focused on how am I going to navigate insurance. You're focused on how do I stay alive?
Mm-hmm.
How do I continue to parent my child and be a wife to my husband and a help to our congregation?
Well, I'd like to take a turn now in our conversation here.
Sure.
I appreciated this, of your talking about being a cancer survivor and all the things that we learn. But it's very noted here among all of us that you are quite a advocate for women's role and women's place in church and family, and that you are this several times. And that's what I wanted you to come and talk to us about, a woman's place and the importance of women and how even biblically the older women are to help the younger women and to teach them. Tell me about your interest in the subject and why you speak about it?
Well, my interest started at a very early age. As you know, David and I were married quite young. I was 20, he was 23. And I often tell people when we got married, we loved each other, but we didn't have a clue what it took to be married, what that commitment meant. And shortly after we got married, we moved to Montana. And that's where I learned that God really holds you to your vows, because as we got married, I decided I was going to speak the passage from Ruth to him: wherever you go, I will go. Your people will be my people. And he took me 2,000 miles away from home to Montana from East Texas. And so we ended up in a Starbucks, and I'm telling him I want to go home. And he says, but I have it on videotape that you said you'd follow me. And I said, but I didn't mean outside of the state of Texas. So I had to really stop and decide, did I mean those words that I spoke when I said I do? Did I truly mean that I would follow you? And as I was trying to figure that out, our elder, Rock Corbett, and his wife, Nancy, what occurred to me recently is she is the age that I am now when I first met her. She was the age that I am now when I first met her. And I think she saw us, they saw both of us, and that we were a mess, and that without intervention, we might go downhill rapidly. And so she came alongside me, and in her very Nancy way, which is just the epitome of gentleness mm-hmm. and kindness, but strength, she showed me what it was to be a wife, to love your husband, to keep a commitment. And I can't tell you all the times over the years that I would call her or pour my heart out to her. And I might be very upset with David about something that I thought was grossly unfair. And rather than just agree with me, she would speak truth to me mm-hmm. in love. Huh. And so she guided me. And I told someone earlier today, when I think of being a reflection, you know, that we're to reflect God, we're to reflect our elder brother, Jesus Christ, you know, I want to do that more than anything. But if somebody came up to me and said, you're a reflection of Nancy, you look like her. Well, I think Nancy looks like Christ. You know, when I mm-hmm. see her, I see someone mm-hmm. who tries to emulate Jesus Christ. And so I would take that as a compliment, you know, and I hope that that I can in turn be that for someone else, that I can be that type of friend and mentor and companion.
Well, I'd like to ask the big question that yes. we talked about beforehand, is that how do you see women, young and old, as valuable members of church and society?
Well, I think our role is distinctly different from men, and I don't want to put on a man's hat, but I do see us as having something so very important to offer. Often as women, as wives and moms, we're the primary ones in the rearing of our children. And I think so, and I guess I need to be careful how I say that, because my husband is an excellent father. But I just think often women are that first line of defense in the home, because we're the ones usually getting them ready for school, out the door, you know, putting Band-Aids on the knees. And we kind of sense the temperature of the home. And I think often we can sense the temperature of our congregations. And so we can be a very good reader of how things are going in our congregations. And I think that can be used for the good if it's done, again, in love and in humility. As you said, my husband is the pastor, and I try to come alongside him as best I can and say, you know, I think this might be an issue that you need to investigate. I'm sensing that there's discord over here, or that maybe someone over here is lonely and needs a visit. And so I try to truly be his helpmate in that way. I love, as you know, I do enjoy writing. I haven't done it in a while, but I think having a voice that way, figuring out in writing and music and just programs in your community and getting involved. And as I've heard someone put it, get off the bench and onto the battlefield, you know, mm-hmm. and get involved in our communities.
Well, you talked about the husbands yes. needing a little bit of coaching. I know that we could be clueless.
Yes.
You know, we could be big leaders, you know, leading big groups and saying lofty things in sermons.
Yes.
But we can be clueless to the infrastructure of the church and to the people on the street, you know, in the church, and who need to be prompted that. I appreciate my wife saying that, you know, you need to call this person. You need
yes.
to call this person. And I'll say, well, yeah, I guess I do, which I would not probably have done mm-hmm. if it wasn't for her mm-hmm. prompting.
We just see different sides of the picture. you know, we're both looking at the same picture, but I think, you know, I see different colors than he does sometimes. And so I just try to bring that to the table and say, I know you've got this covered really well, but I think you might be missing this piece. So I think in that way, we're a good team.
Joy, I'd like to talk about your work as a pastor's wife.
You know,
we are developing a young ministry. You're part of however you feel about your age. You are younger ministers. You're the new ministers on the block, so to speak.
Yes.
And what have you learned, and what have you feel like you've been able to contribute?
I might turn that around just a little bit and say I think it's more of what I've gained. I've had a chance to talk to many women since David was ordained and we've gone into the pastorate who have called us to say we've been approached to maybe enter the ministry, and they'll ask, you know, how has it been for you? And I can say wholeheartedly and without hesitation, I always say it's an incredible blessing. But I think it's kind of like parenting. When someone walks up to you and says, I think I'm ready to have a child. And as a mom, and I'm sure a dad, there's so much going through your head about all the things they're going to face. You can imagine those initial counseling visits, or the first time your husband held a Sabbath service, and as a wife, I'm holding my breath. Please, God, let him to remember everything that he's practiced in. Uh-huh. And it's all going through your head, but what comes out of your mouth is you're going to do just fine. Because uh-huh. You know they're going to navigate that road and they'll find their own way. And I think in the ministry specifically, speaking about my experience, I think I've been amazed and honored day in and day out to be invited into people's lives. And that is what has been my takeaway from it. If mm-hmm. I think about my specific takeaway, mm-hmm. is when your husband is the pastor, you are given an invitation into people's lives that would never have been extended in that way otherwise. And they open a door to you because I think they trust the role of pastor. And then as wife, you're coming alongside to be there, and you get to experience all of that. And individuals will share their journeys, their struggles, their trials, their overcomings, their triumphs, the good. And it's beautiful and it's wonderful. And you get to feel like, I guess I use the word companion a lot, but you get to feel like you walk alongside them.
Well, we have used the term team ministry.
Yes.
Of more the Aquila Priscilla.
Yes.
You know, ministry where the wife has... She does everything that her husband does. In fact, she's probably more responsible for the infrastructure of the church. I mean, she builds the relationships with the church of who she talks to and what she says and so forth that makes the church put together. If it wasn't for her, it really wouldn't be as tightly bound as the church is. And I'm sure that that's what you do.
I do my best. I will say I want to give kudos to my husband because he has... While he may have never been a counselor professionally, that's my background is counseling. Mm-hmm. I'm often amazed at his insight and understanding on an issue. And so there have been many times where I think, wow, he saw something I didn't. And so I think I would just reiterate the team aspect. I feel like we are such a team that he will turn to me and ask my opinion on something. You know, if we're doing a marriage counseling with someone, he wants to hear my voice. He just doesn't want to have his, you know, he's not mm-hmm. the only one doing the talking. He'll ask for my input and kind of seek my thoughts on a situation that might arise. You know, he'll bring something to me and say, okay, this has come up. What do you think? Is there anything I'm missing? Mm-hmm. And that's a question he will ask me sometimes. Is there anything I'm missing? And I appreciate that so much because it tells me he values what my insights are. Mm-hmm. And so I feel truly a part of the pastoral team in mm-hmm. that way.
Joy, it's been really great talking to you today on Inside United. We appreciate hearing about you personally. We enjoy hearing from you as a woman, also of a part of the ministry. So we'd like to hear from you at podcast@ucg.org. Please write to us and tell us your thoughts about this podcast and others. Also, tell your friends about Inside United. Tell them where they can find it on our ucg.org website by pressing on the podcast button. Also, get your podcast app from iOS or from Android at your favorite store. And Be sure to include Inside United, where you will be notified about every new Inside United podcast. But Joy, it's been wonderful. We appreciate your very much taking the time to talk to us, and we hope to hear from you again soon.
Thank you, Victor. I really appreciate it. It was so lovely to be here.
Thank you for joining us on Inside United. Come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.